Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. I'm here with Wisconsin Public Radio Director Mike Crane, and we would like to ask you to invest 3 minutes, just 3 minutes of your time in your own future. Our goal is to ensure that all of the programs that you value, including this one, are here on Wisconsin Public Radio when you want them. A contribution of any amount will do just that. Please make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Mike.
It's good to be here. And now, last hour, Kathleen, we had a goal of 200 pledges, and we've been sitting here in the studio saying,
wow.
Oh, my goodness.
Amazing.
479 people pledged during the last hour, so more than doubling the number of people that we were hoping for.
Wonderful.
That's terrific.
Wonderful.
Now, of course, you know how it goes. That doesn't mean that we don't have a goal, but we hope this is very reachable with your help right now. Our goal for this hour, 50 pledges. So help us to meet that goal by making your contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your gift ensures that the programs you enjoy will be here every day on Wisconsin Public Radio. Contribute at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
As you know, this is another big day in the state of Wisconsin, with the governor giving his budget address to a joint session of the Wisconsin legislature this afternoon. We will carry that, by the way. And David K. Johnston will be joining us to talk about his take on the pension cuts in Governor Walker's budget repair bill. And he will also ask him to take a broader look at what's happening with state budgets and who's at fault for all of that and what can be done to make states solvent and people happy again. Discussions like this on the Ideas Network are possible because of your financial support. Please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
During this membership drive, we'd like to say thanks for your support in a special way. When you pledge $120 to support WPR programs, you can choose a thank you gift that will provide 40 meals to a Wisconsin food bank near you.
Very nice. Let the impact of your pledge go beyond great radio to those in need in your community, and there are many. Pledge any amount right now. When you pledge $120, select, as Mike was talking about, the Food for 40 as your thank you gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
WPR's Ideas Network is with you all day long. Whether you wake up with us or ride to work or run errands with us, cook dinner with us, listen at home, at work, you get interesting discussions whenever you want them. We're always here, and you make that possible with your donation. Wisconsin Public Radio would not be what it is without your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Giving just couldn't be simpler. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We need your name, contact information, the amount of your pledge, and how you would like to pay for it.
And you can use a credit card. We hope you will do that because it saves both you and WPR time and the price of a stamp. Or better yet, sign up for an automatic sustaining donation from your bank account. And don't worry, we don't share your personal information with any other organizations. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Thank you very, very much for all of your donations. You have just been so generous, and to tell you the truth, we need you. So thank you very much. Thanks, Mike. We'll talk to you later. Well, it's another big day in the state of Wisconsin. The governor, all eyes in the country, will be on the governor of Wisconsin this afternoon at 4 o'clock. We will be presenting the governor's budget address live from the state capitol, and we'll also be offering a rebroadcast of the address at 7 o'clock tonight. The governor is expected to slash $3.6 billion in funding, which will affect so many aspects of government and schools in the state. Joining us this hour is one of the smartest people we know. We discovered him some time ago, and you keep saying, have him back, because he really knows money. And we're delighted to have David K. Johnston with with us. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. He wrote on taxes for the New York Times for a number of years. He's a lecturer at Syracuse University College of Law and Whitman School of Management. He is a columnist at Tax.com, and he is the author of a book that will make you darned angry, Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill. He's written a piece on Tax.com specifically about Wisconsin, really bad reporting in Wisconsin, who contributes to public workers' pensions, and we'll get to that column in a moment. David, we're also welcoming phone calls for David. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Hi, David. Thank you so much for being with us.
Delighted to be here, Kathleen.
Well, how about Wisconsin, sir?
Well, this is a very interesting development. The column that I wrote is about a specific aspect of it, but I think it is correct that what's really going on here is an effort to eliminate public employee unions. The governor could, for example, propose to re-bargain the contracts and reopen them, and the employees apparently have indicated they're willing to make a lot of concessions. But he is quite adamant, and we know from the call where he got pranked, where he thought he was talking to David Koch, that in fact this is the larger plan, is to get rid of public employee unions. And that would have two very significant effects for people who aren't public employees. First of all, it would tend to lower the overall wage level, mm-hmm. because unions mean higher pay, and if you eliminate these rights, then private sector workers will see downward pressure on their wages, and the average and median wage paid in this country in 2010 was smaller than it was in the year 2000. Wages are, in fact, literally falling. And then the second effect would be a big shift in power, unless something else changes, between the two parties, because the Republicans are quite right. The Democrats depend heavily on unions and union supporters to organize people to get out to vote. And unions, although they are some large contributors, overall their campaign contributions pale besides those of large corporate interests.
So, David, tell me, let's go back a step here. It's not just Wisconsin. The first one that came to our attention was California. It's states all over the country who are saying they have these huge deficits. Let's look at who started this. Was it the crooks on Wall Street who took our money and then they got huge bonuses? Was it public employee pensions and health care? Was it everybody's health care and not having a program that's going to help everybody and keep costs down? Who's to blame here? Where do we need to look?
Well, fundamentally, we need to look to ourselves. That's the whole point of self-governance and democracy, that, you know, we elect representatives to represent us. And for a long, long time, they have been focused on issues other than taking care of ordinary people, and we keep reelecting them. But let me walk through some of the key factors that work here. First of all, most of the increase in taxes that people have paid as a share of income since World War II has been state and local government, not federal. Federal individual income taxes right now are per capita 36% lower than they were in the year 2000, and as a share of the total economy, they are at the lowest level since Harry Truman was president.
36% lower than the year 2000?
That's right.
Wow.
And total taxes are down. You know, one of the big lies you hear is tax cuts, more revenue. Simply not true. And my column this week in Tax Notes, which is not up on our public website yet, and I don't know when it'll be, it may be next week before we put it up there, our free website, details this and shows it from the official data. I mean, it's right in the official numbers. So understand that it is increased costs of state and local government that have been a key factor in this. And what we have done over time is we've dramatically improved, in fact, our society through this additional spending. On state and local governments. We have also, I think, spent some money unwisely. I mean, there's been a major reduction in crime in this country since 1980. Burglaries are down, I think, 42%. Homicides are down 25% or so. But we haven't reduced the number of police as the crime problem has gone down. But it is important to understand that it's state and local government spending, not federal government spending, that has been the additional tax burden on people. A second factor is that we are putting a lot of our tax money into productive uses, like something like 1 out of 4 people or 1 out of 5 people in the whole world who are in prison or jail are in the United States, and we have, 5 or 6% of the world's population.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, we have a growing problem with government programs that try to very inefficiently and ineffectively buy jobs. Here in New York State, where I live, 2 rural counties recently agreed to pay Yahoo $2.1 million to create 200 jobs and to give Verizon $3.1 million. And these jobs will pay on average around $50,000 a year. So just to equal out the value of the jobs would take 60-some years. This is a huge growing problem of giveaways to business. In Wisconsin, your state, the state got rid of auditors who were auditing corporations, and most of the large corporations pay little or no tax. We don't know individually, but we do know statistically that they pay little or no tax. That shifted the burdens onto ordinary folks. Next, the defined benefit pension plans have not been properly funded. Workers negotiated for these benefits. They have a contractual right. Once they have performed the work, the money is theirs. But the state politicians, in effect management, did not properly put aside enough money each year to fund these pensions, and then they paid Wall Street huge fees for advice that has not led to good results. The state Wisconsin Pension Board's investments lost over $10 billion between June 30th of 2008 and July 1 of 2009, over $10 billion. And all of these fees, the amount of money the state put in cash in the plan last year, about 15% of it, is the cost of supporting the Wall Street investment advisors.
Oh my gosh.
That's excessively high. It's not outrageously high compared to other states, but I think it's excessively high. And the performance, if you pay for all this advice, you should be getting superior investment performance and taking fewer risks. And it appears the state has taken a lot of risks. But pensions, the total contribution the state made to the pension plan last year is like $220 per resident of the state. That's not a small amount of money, but that's not the core of the problem that the state is having.
Mm-hmm.
And the fundamental problem is our incomes are falling. Therefore, guess what? Our tax revenues are falling.
Exactly.
We have less money to buy goods. Therefore,
right.
less sales tax revenue. We have less income. And because of the way the tax system works, as incomes fall, tax revenues fall even faster.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a belief of some people that we can't really tax corporations very much because, after all, they're responsible for creating jobs. Our governor has said that we are open for business and really wants to attract businesses here. And yet, as you've seen, we've had hundreds of thousands of protesters. I've never seen anything like this in Wisconsin, who are willing to make their total compensation less with pensions and with health care. But some people are asking, well, what about an issue of fairness here? Can you tax corporations perhaps a little bit more or something? Should they be taxed more? Or would that keep jobs from coming to the state of Wisconsin? It's sort of one of the basic arguments in this
right.
state.
Well, Kathleen, one of the important things to remember is you have to look at this now as a global issue because we've decided to have a global economy. And that changes the whole ballgame for everything. So the U.S. had high corporate taxes, and they provided a significant portion of the federal budget and state budgets back in the 1950s when we were the overwhelming dominant economic force in the world. We have decided to change that policy. One of the things I often get up and tell audiences if they happen to be labor people, and I talk to everybody. I go to CEO clubs of executives, and I talk to labor unions. I often get up at blue-collar union groups and say, you know, you're the most generous people in the history of the world because many blue-collar workers in America have voted for people and supported and sustained them in office who've decided that you should lose your jobs and have your wages cut so the rural poor of China can be better off. And I
oh
think
my
we
gosh.
Should applaud your generosity.
Oh.
The fact is corporations are now in a position where they can game this system, and they're gaming it very brilliantly. And that's a reality. We got to accept that. So I have in my column in tax.com repeatedly suggested that we need to fundamentally examine how we're taxing corporations. You cannot eliminate the corporate income tax and have an individual income tax. That's a long discussion we spent a whole radio show on. Just for the moment, accept it as a truth. And once you recognize that, then the question becomes, well, how do you work the system to get the revenue necessary to supply the common goods on which wealth building depends? And so while other parts of the world are using their tax revenues to make sure that their young people are highly educated in math and science and biology, and that's where the big future fortunes will be in biology, we have politicians who are saying we're paying our school teachers too much. Well, that means you don't want as smart people teaching in school then, because lower wages will lead to lesser quality teachers. We are saying we can't afford these things. That means we're going to choose to be poorer in the future. And so we need to have a fundamental discussion about how we're going to provide the common goods that are necessary. And I think one of the key elements to this is this, and it's, I admit, very counterintuitive. Lower taxes on capital have led to job destruction. If you own a business and the cost of taking money out of the business is paying a 15% tax on dividends at the federal level, and your spouse wants a $100 million oil painting, you may well say, well, okay, because it's only going to cost me another $15 or $17 million in taxes in order to get that oil painting. But if there's a 50% tax, you're more likely to say, I'm not taking $200 million out of my business so you can have a $100 million painting hang on the wall. We're not going to do that. Think of all the jobs that will destroy. And we are seeing among the very, very wealthiest people in America this explosion of unproductive investments. We now have $100 million mansions. We have a candidate for president who couldn't remember if the family owned 7 or 9 residences.
Right, right.
And when you have higher taxes, you effectively use policy to force owners of business, or at least encourage and coerce them, into reinvesting in the business, which creates jobs, instead of taking it out to buy unproductive assets whose prices are being bid up. The rest of the economy is falling apart, and unproductive asset prices are rising.
We're also seeing those wealthy Americans that you talk about, and some of them are wealthy beyond imagination, have incredible amounts of political influence.
Yes, well, that's another fundamental problem that we have created in this country. The way the political finance works is what I call the political donor class. I wonder if any reader here thinks that they could have gotten the governor on the phone for 20 minutes to talk about what's going on, the way the pranker posing as David Koch did. If you are a big campaign contributor, that's the access you have. In fact, I had somebody in my backyard one day. I live in Rochester, New York, who I raised a question about a member of Congress, and they just picked up their cell phone, pushed speed dial, and got the congressperson.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know, I mean, I know the same person, but I don't have their private cell phone and speed dial access. And I think we need to recognize there's a real fundamental problem here about democracy. This decision by the Supreme Court called United Citizens, we were warned against ideas like this by none other than United States Chief Justice William Rehnquist in a case called Bellotti, B-E-L-L-O-T-T-I, for anybody who wants to look up. He wrote a dissenting opinion that said it is one thing to give property rights under the Fourth Amendment to corporations, but an entirely different thing to give them political rights because they are not natural human beings. And the Citizens United decision over time is going to turn out to be to politics and public policy what the Big Bang was to what the singularity was to the Big Bang. It's the entire universe.
Let's go to phone calls. We have a full bank of them. Our guest this hour is David K. Johnston, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, lecturer at Syracuse University College of Law and Whitman School of Management, author of Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill. We go to Pat from Oconomowoc first. Hi, Pat.
Hey, guys. Hey, Mr. Johnston, I guess you'll be all right because you're among a lot of liberal friends here on this program, but the problem with the article is, to me, it's all semantics. You're talking about deferred compensation. I think we all understand, we work from the premise that, yes, they negotiated pensions, health care, and also a wage, which makes up 100% of their compensation plan. They are owed that money. But at the end of the day, if a school teacher in Wisconsin, an average school teacher in Milwaukee, is making $101,000, we simply can't afford that going forward. So I don't care if they get 50% of it in the form of salary, 50% of it in the form of deferred compensation. It is the taxpayers' money. You can't argue that it's not the taxpayers' money.
All right. We need to backtrack here because we haven't even yet been able to talk about your column that looked at really bad reporting in Wisconsin who contributes to public workers' pensions. We posted this on our Facebook, and people, thank you very much, have read it. So maybe we need to talk about what that involves, David.
Well, first of all, the caller is dealing with what I think is a very, very important issue here, and there's a subtlety I think a lot of people have missed in my column. There is a legitimate question as to how much taxpayers can afford to pay teachers and police officers and others going forward. How much we pay people, whether it's divvied up as all cash or part pension or part vacation, that's internal accounting. The issue is how much in total is the compensation package. And it may well be that Wisconsin cannot afford this. I mean, the unions themselves have said they will make significant concessions in light of economic conditions in order to do this. I don't see where that's connected to saying you can't have any collective bargaining rights. That's a huge leap from the underlying issue. But the burden on the taxpayer is a perfectly reasonable issue. My column at tax.com was a criticism of journalists who uncritically accepted the premise of what Governor Walker said and didn't think this through. And I have to tell you, I've had hundreds and hundreds of people either email me or post at the hundreds of blogs that have picked up on this piece. And I'm surprised at the number of people who, to be blunt about it, have what they think is a conservative viewpoint that's actually communism. I've had people write to me and say, no, it's not their money. It's my money as a taxpayer. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, if you live in a communist society where the state controls everything, then it's your money. And this caller doesn't believe that. Very clear. He understands this point. But I am really concerned that have so many people, vitriolically angry people, who've sent me, as you can imagine, pretty nasty messages. Who don't grasp this, who are unable to understand the principles of market economics, that once you've earned the money, it's your money, and you can decide how to spend it. And the unions collectively have said, we want to put this much of it into the pension plan. But how much you can afford to pay is a perfectly legitimate issue, and that's what we have bargaining for. You sit down and you negotiate.
And it's also something that we ought to be discussing in our society as a whole. I'm of the belief... because I am a teacher, actually, and because my children have been taught and I've been taught, and I think they're way underpaid to begin with. And I don't think we even have that kind of conversation in our society of how valuable people are. These are among the most valuable people in the whole country.
Well, in fact, we have some economic proof of that. If you look at housing prices, you will see that there's a clear correlation all around the country in every market between the perceived quality of schools and housing prices. So I raised the youngest of my 2A children in a school district that provides the functional equivalent of a private school education. They had a better education at the end of high school than I probably did after 2 or 3 years of college because I didn't grow up in the circumstances that I live in now. And if you go just across the line, 5 blocks away to the next school district, a house identical to mine costs about 2/3 as much money.
Right. Oh, there is so much to this story, David, isn't there? It just goes on and on. There's level after level after level to it. All right.
These are complicated issues. It's part of the challenge to democracy is how complicated the world is. And that's why one of the things I emphasize all the time are fundamental basics and understanding those. Because if you don't understand the principles, you'll never get the mechanics right. Remember, we had people who built models in the 1500s and the 1600s proving that the Earth was the center of the universe and getting the motions of the stars and the planets to work out. You have to have the fundamentals. If you get the principles and the fundamentals, then you can figure out the mechanics. And that's where what I detect in all these emails I get is a lot of people don't understand the fundamentals. Then we can have a debate about, well, you know, what is the appropriate way to pay teachers? How do we deal with tenure, which started out as a system to protect you from what you taught being a reason to fire you is with the Scopes Monkey Trial into a system that a lot of people argue, and I think with a lot of validity, protects bad teachers and, by the way, is hated by the really good teachers for the same reason. Many of the really good teachers, anyway.
David K. Johnson is our guest this hour. Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, really knows the huge picture and the many layers of conversation and issues when it comes to money. and is giving us his take on what's going on in the state of Wisconsin. We've been doing, I think, superb coverage from all kinds of viewpoints and really learning a lot. You almost reach the point where, I'm learning so much, I'm learning, and there's so much more to learn. Your brain almost feels overloaded. I can't believe that I'm saying this because I love to have an overloaded brain, but oh my goodness. And today is a big day, of course, in the state. This afternoon at 4 here on the Ideas Network, live from the state capitol, we will be bringing you Governor Scott Walker's budget address to a joint session of the Wisconsin legislature, and we'll have a rebroadcast at 7 o'clock tonight because many of you will be working at 4 o'clock this afternoon. So we will rebroadcast that tonight at 7. We have tons of phone calls. Please be patient. Stay on hold, and we'll be with you momentarily. We are in our Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. WPR's director Mike Crane is joining me in our downtown Milwaukee studios. And you know that you get a lot out of Wisconsin Public Radio, no matter where you listen. Today we're asking you to put something back in, and that is money. At WPR, we do count on listener contributions to pay for just about everything we do. Your gift now keeps the programs you value, including this one, on the air. So please make your contribution now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're having a strong hour so far, Kathleen. But listeners, we are looking for your pledge in this next 30 minutes or so. Your pledge right now helps to keep Kathleen's show and all of the Ideas Network and the news reporting that you count on going strong. Make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
On the Ideas Network, you hear from the person who wrote the bill, who wrote the book, who has unique experience, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists. We're glad to seek these people out and get them on the show. Privileged, in fact. It's a privilege to do this job. It's an important job to do as well, and it's an important network. But we need to have your help to make it possible. So make great radio happen right now. Continue great radio with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've made the decision to listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, probably even more now than in other times because you're so interested in the topics that are being covered. So now we're asking you, make the decision to support Wisconsin Public Radio financially. The correlation is as simple as that. Pledging is simple, too, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We heard from one donor who said, every day WPR brightens my mind and raises my spirit and piques my curiosity. Another said, WPR is the best deal ever.
Thanks for those comments. We couldn't have said it any better ourselves because you have these same thoughts running through your head. Support WPR right now with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We often say it's easy to support Wisconsin Public Radio, and the easiest way is to become a sustaining member. A sustaining membership, it's one that's ongoing, either from your bank account or a credit card, and because it automatically renews, you don't have to renew, you don't have to remember something else to renew each year.
And it's such a great way to give that we want to encourage you to do it. Becoming a sustaining member means that we will plant a tree for you in the Shawamigan Nicolet National Forest. You make a renewable gift, we'll plant a renewable resource. Become a sustaining member right now with an ongoing monthly gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Plant a tree, write a book, have a child. Torah, have a meaningful life. So we'll take care of the tree part for you.
Yeah.
That's not a bad deal, huh? Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Also, when you pledge $120 or more, you can choose Food for 40 as your thank you gift, providing 40 meals to those facing hunger in your area. Please pledge now. These are important conversations that we're having. Who knew all of this was going to happen? And we have so much to learn, and we're doing our best to bring you information. Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. David K. Johnston is our guest. We go back to phone calls and Rich from Sullivan. Thanks, Rich, for waiting.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning, David. Kathleen went out on a limb earlier in this conversation when she referred to the crooks on Wall Street, but on Sunday night, the maker of a film, Inside Job, basically said the same thing. And even so conservative a commentator in the state of Wisconsin as Bill Krause, lifelong Republican, from around Stevens Point, and a member of Lee Sherman Dreyfus's administration, has said this past 3 years there's been criminal activity on Wall Street. For me, the operative term is that they are criminals, not all of them, but many of them, and I'm wondering, David, if you agree.
Well, first of all, the film, I encourage people to go see. The creator of it is a former business professor.
Oh, really?
Which not many people know. And it is an excellent film. And it is astonishing to me, but I understand why. We had more than 1,000 criminal convictions in the SNL crisis 20 years ago. I believe we've had exactly 2 indictments in the current crisis, and those guys were acquitted or their case ended. The reason we're not going to see criminal convictions is in 2 parts. One, it is the official position, and you can read it on the FBI website, that the only forms of mortgage fraud are by buyers who lie about their incomes in order to flip a property to make money, or buyers who lie about their incomes in order to occupy a property they can't afford for their personal pleasure. There is no acceptance whatsoever of the idea that because banks no longer eat their own cooking, that is, they sell off their mortgages to somebody else and pocket the fees, that they would sell bad mortgages to get the fees. So officially, the crimes that are at the core of our financial trouble are not perceived as crimes by the Obama administration, the previous administration, or the FBI. The second problem is one of reasonable doubt. If we were to prosecute a number of these cases, and I know a great deal about, and I were on a jury for the basic fraud charge, I, in good conscience, could not convict these people. We have created a set of rules that if you can keep even a con job going, as long as it's an actual business, not Bernie Madoff type stuff, but an actual business, for, say, 3 or 4, in the case of Anthony Mazzillo, as a scheme for about a decade, the defense that the market turned against me is reasonable doubt. And I think we need to fundamentally reexamine, in light of modern economics and what spreadsheets have done to our ability to manipulate funds and future values and present values, we need to reevaluate our criminal statutes.
Thank you very much, Rich, for your call. The governor of our state this afternoon is going to announce the budget. The initial reports are that he plans to cut $3.6 billion. School districts will be facing much less money this year. Municipalities, local governments will be facing much less money. A couple questions here. What will it do to a state to have that kind of slash in income? B, do you think that it is a crisis that not only Wisconsin is facing, but other states are facing, and it simply needs to be done now? C, what about the threats of layoffs? Well, I could go on. There's so much to this story. But is it a crisis? Do jobs need to be and money need to be slashed to that extent, do you think, David?
Well, you can't cut your way back to prosperity. That's the first thing we need to recognize. What you're seeing is a collapse of demand, and that's a vicious cycle like water going down the toilet or down the drain. It's swirling, and it's going to get worse. We had fewer jobs created in the aughts than were created during the Eisenhower administration, and fewer jobs during the G.W. Bush administration than during the Eisenhower administration. Remember, we were a much, much smaller population back then. Average income, total income, average wages and median wages are all down. And we're getting poorer. And we're getting poorer because of government policies that are making us poorer. We need to rethink fundamentally how we're going to run our country in a world in which we no longer have, as we did at the end of World War II, half the manufacturing capacity,
mm-hmm.
and where many of the basic wealth creation issues are not in any way tied to the United States. And let me give you one little example of this. You know, a lot of people have been in favor of these huge public subsidies where your tax dollars are used to give money to BMW or Harley Davidson or somebody else to build vehicles here.
Yeah.
Well, when you buy a Toyota built in Marysville, Ohio, the single largest value added, the economic wealth created from that car, is in the very costly, expensive engineering and creation of metal parts that torque within the engine, the drive shaft, the pistons, the piston rods, and parts of the transmission. All of that high-value work, including the engineering work, is done in Japan. All we do here is assemble the thing. And some manufacturing, but it's the low-value manufacturing. And this is a very subtle issue that I don't expect most Americans to ever have the time to get at, but our leaders need to understand this, and we need to focus on value-added economic production in this country and wealth creation. And underlying wealth creation, the foundation of all wealth, is taxes, because there is no civilization without taxes. And we need to understand that common goods, education, public health, transportation, whether it's by barge or highway or however else, all of those are funded with tax dollars. And we, if we don't have a strong base, then we can't have widespread prosperity and significant wealth creation.
Mark in Appleton is our next caller. Hi, Mark.
Morning. Your guest referred earlier to our high imprisonment rate, and in Wisconsin we have approximately 30% of our people in prison for marijuana crimes. Now, I've written a tax plan that if 10% of the people in this state utilize medical marijuana and pay taxes on it, in 1 year they would create over $1 billion in sales tax revenue. So it would pretty much wipe out this big budget crisis we have due to the fact that you create almost 200,000 jobs. You would eliminate so many people being in prison, which would give another area of tax revenue back to the state, and you wouldn't have to cut teachers, you wouldn't have to cut education.
David.
Well, I think prohibition clearly hasn't worked. The war on drugs hasn't worked. We're seeing mass murder and civil warfare taking place right across our border. It turns out a lot of it with weapons bought in Arizona and other places, ABC News revealed the other day. And it is reasonable to predict that if we don't change policy, we're going to have open warfare in the streets in this country sooner or later over controlling what government policy makes an incredibly profitable business. I would add one caution about this. I don't believe we should encourage casino gambling. We should allow it, but not encourage it. My first book, Temples of Chance, was about this 20 years ago. If we're going to legalize marijuana, I think we want to set up the rules to make sure it isn't become a big business. It's a small business with lots of entrepreneurs, and the policy is designed to limit and restrict use with significant penalties for people whose conduct under the influence, because they're allowed to buy this product, is quite severe to minimize the downside.
Thanks, Mark, for the call. Deborah in Madison. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling to sort of back up along those same lines as what he was saying earlier. The comparison of state employees to private employees could almost be seen, at least those who are out on the street complaining, saying they deserve part of what we've saved over the years, is kind of like the grasshopper and the ant. Over the years, we keep saying we'll defer immediate financial gain for long-term benefit because we saw the beauty of saving. What we're told is most of our country hasn't saved enough, which is why they're in trouble now. We should be trying, I think, as a state, and I've felt this for decades, everyone who's a citizen of the state of Wisconsin should be eligible to invest in the state retirement fund. It is recognized as the best retirement system in the country and possibly the world. It is so well managed. And all that money, by the time we're through, we're in training the benefit of all the talent and innovation of companies around the world where it's invested, and in training that back into the state of Wisconsin. And that money is working for the entire state when it does this.
David.
Well, I absolutely think we need to have more savings, and defined benefit pensions are a smart way to do that. And let me explain something a lot of people don't understand. A lot of people think this is sort of a scam or somehow the workers get a free deal. A defined benefit pension is simply a wholesale version of something you can go buy any day of the week. You can go to Northwest Mutual or any other insurance company and say, I have this much money, I'm this old, on this date I want to start to collect an annuity for the rest of my life or for at least 20 years or for my life and then half of my spouse's if my spouse survives me, and they'll say, this is how much we'll give you. You can price it, and it'll take a day or two. There's no reason that we can't do this on a wholesale basis. One of the fundamental things that's created wealth in the world was Adam Smith's insight about specialization. And to expect that janitors or even school teachers or homicide detectives have the skill to manage their own savings and a defined contribution plan and make the right choices about where to put the money for their needs is foolish. Furthermore, because you don't know how long you're going to live, some people will save too much and some people too little. In a defined benefit pension plan where you're guaranteed lifetime, people who die early get a lesser return, people who live a long life get more, but overall, you optimize the amount of money that needs to be put aside. There are, however, I think, real problems with the Wisconsin State Pension Fund. I did some analysis of their numbers. They put themselves into very volatile investments. Secondly, the balance, the average balance for the 566,000 workers is about $131,000. The average pension is pretty modest. It's $24,500 a year. Remember, almost all state workers do not get Social Security, so that's their income in old age. Well, a $24,500 payout against an average balance of $131,000 is kind of scary. Now, that's a little misleading, and people who know pension economics will know that I'm doing something here in shorthand. But the funding levels do not appear to be sufficient, and it appears in part that's because the politicians, that is, the management side of the equation, did not put in enough cash each year to equal the increased pension obligation that people earned each year in their job. And clearly they do that so they can say, I didn't raise your taxes or I held your taxes down. That's a problem in the system but that's management cheating, basically, and trying to get pardon my use of this word, free lunch.
Deborah, thanks for the call. George in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi. Yeah, so many workers feel up against the wall because of the potential for employers to move elsewhere, especially out of the country. And I'm wondering if Mr. Johnson has any thoughts on perhaps some kind of international corporate taxes or how that might work or if it's a possibility?
That's a wonderful and important question, and I will tell you that, and I'm sorry I'm advertising again, but my next book, The Fine Print, when it comes out late this year, will talk a lot about this. But first of all, the U.S. government has been literally subsidizing companies to leave the country. And there was a bill pending in Congress that would reward this subsidy by giving a tax break on about $800 billion of offshore profits. And when we had a similar proposal 7 years ago in 2004, the 2004 Jobs Creation Act, it saved companies $37 billion in taxes and didn't create a single job. We were told it would create 660,000 jobs. A single company, Pfizer, destroyed 40,000 jobs. There was an effort by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD.org on the web, which is the economic organization of the 31 big modern economies in Europe, Asia, and our hemisphere, to coordinate on their taxes so that they couldn't be gamed by corporations. And every country in the world that belongs was in favor of this except the Bush administration. They killed it. And the Treasury Secretary of the United States didn't want to kill this, Paul O'Neill, who's a businessman. You had the far right arguing in favor of tax competition, as they call it. And the leading person fighting this, a man named Dan Mitchell, who used to be at Heritage Foundation, is now at Cato, recently wrote a piece in which he spoke favorably of a federal government with a budget of $450 billion. If that was the size of the federal budget, which is now about $3.7 trillion, so it would be about 12% of what we're spending now, there'd be no money to chase Al-Qaeda. There'd be no money to deal with foodborne illnesses, which, because of budget cuts now in the United States, are 21 times more likely than in France, 8 times more likely than in Britain. The taxing of business and its ability to move around and giving corporations unlimited power to do so is a real problem. And by the way, to those people who are originalists in this audience, and I hope there are some, you should be reading the memos that my researchers at Syracuse University Law School are putting together for me on what the framers said and what the law was at the time we started the Constitution. Corporations were allowed to exist for very limited times, for limited purposes, they had to prove they were doing something in the public interest or they couldn't exist. If you got a corporate charter to build a building and you then said, well, now I want to run a business in this building, you had to get another corporate charter. They were strictly, tightly controlled because the framers understood that this independent entity called a corporation, while it can be a great vehicle for wealth creation, can also be a huge danger to natural persons like you and me. And we've got to recognize that and change our rules, or we're going to all simply end up being vassals of a new world that is corporate world.
If your students are game, you're on for a show on that one. That'll be interesting. David, thank you as always. You just fill our minds with so much, and I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care, Kathleen.
David K. Johnston, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, lecturer, Syracuse University College of Law and Whitman School of Management. We'll have him on, of course, for his next book, The Fine Print. And we want to let you know that he writes at tax.com, always provocative columns, author of Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill. Many aspects to this story, which we will continue to cover, and a reminder that this afternoon at 4, a very important address from the governor of the state of Wisconsin. It's the budget address to a joint session of the Wisconsin legislature, a rebroadcast of that address tonight at 7. I'm Kathleen Dunn. With me, Mike Crane, director of WPR, and this is Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive, giving now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Keeps this program going strong, and it only takes a few minutes of your time. Please invest in your future listening by donating now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Kathleen, we have a dollar-for-dollar match right now.
Oh.
It's just put in front of us for $1,000. This is a generous challenge offered by an anonymous donor, and it is her way of encouraging you to support Wisconsin Public Radio right now. Not tomorrow, not later, just right now. Take advantage of that dollar-for-dollar match and get your pledge doubled right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Oh, that's great. Those don't happen very often, so take advantage of it. Also, you've been listening, of course, to the conversation with Pulitzer Prize winner David K. Johnston about some of the financial aspects of the budget repair bill. Take a few minutes to make this hour and many hours to come possible. We really have stepped to the plate, I think, on the news, the coverage, the addresses. This station has really informed you the past few weeks going into, well, we always inform you, but informed you on this issue. Please put a value on the programs you enjoy every day and make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you pledge $120 or more, you can choose Food for 40 as your thank you gift. This is a thank you gift that will provide 40 meals for those facing hunger in your area. For more information about Food for 40 and to make your pledge, go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Mike Crane is joining me in our Milwaukee studios here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is a big part of why this program is available to you right now. Make your donation in support of the programs that you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have a dollar-for-dollar match right now up to $1,000 offered by a generous anonymous donor. So your gift of $50 turns into $100. $100 into $200. You get the idea. Take advantage of this match to make your gift go even farther by making your pledge right now. It'll help to pay for the Kathleen Dunn Show and all of the things that you enjoy on Wisconsin Public Radio. Get your pledge matched dollar for dollar right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you have a strong sense of what it means to be a Wisconsinite, chances are that Wisconsin Public Radio plays an important role in that sense of identity. I think that's true.
On Wisconsin Public Radio, you get news, you get voices, you get sounds from all over the state. You get the voices of your neighbors on call-in shows.
Mm-hmm.
Over time, all of these broadcasts add up to a strong sense of connection to the state we call home.
Wisconsin Public Radio, it's really a home that we all share, and it's funded in large part by listeners. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you have the capacity right now, share your passion for WPR with others by making a pledge of $1,000 or more. Radio is accessible to everyone, but of course not everyone has the means to support it. Your gift of $1,000 supports your listening and also makes WPR available in your community. Of course, every pledge, no matter the amount, really is appreciated at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
WPR exists because people contribute. When we all give, our contributions add up to make this program possible. Your contribution really does make a difference.
So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It's as simple as that. One pledge at a time, you make Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Make your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And this doesn't happen often. We have a dollar-for-dollar match. It's up to $1,000 in effect right now. It's a great time to pledge because, as Mike was saying, for every dollar you give, an anonymous donor will donate an additional dollar. It's her way of encouraging you to support this program. Double the buying power of your pledge right now by giving at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Kathleen, I'll mention we have just crossed that amount. That is terrific.
Oh, did we really? Great.
Yes. So, so that's thrilling. Keep making those pledges, though, because every dollar makes a difference to Wisconsin Public Radio. Every gift matters. $60 here, $120 there, an occasional $1,000 pledge. That's how it works. Individual donations from thousands of listeners just like you make up the largest share of our budget.
Thank you very much, Mike. And thanks, everybody, for all of your pledges. Just a reminder, the governor will have his budget address. We will carry it live from the state capitol at 4. It will be rebroadcast tonight at 7. Rest assured, we will talk about it tomorrow morning because that's what we do. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for on-air production. And thank you, everybody, for your great interest in this topic and your contributions to the show. This is the Ideas Network.